Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Mickey Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Jeremy Thursday as he brings you the Headliner's Ball. Break on through with Pam on Friday. Saturday, join Babla and Ephesiana as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And then every other Sunday, join Robert M. as he brings you the solace of shadows. These shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. How is it going?
All righty.
Awesome sauce. Oh, well, you know, life is good. The weather is warming up. I just snacked on strawberries and grapes, you know, and what else? I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets, and we got an awesome lineup of poetry. I have to say, great prompt choices. I even had other people telling me today what a great poem it was, and I'm like, yep, Rex did a good job this time. Well, you do a good job every time, but really, choosing that individual poem Splash by Bukowski, which had so many different wonderful lines to delve into, was awesome choice.
Yeah, it wasn't his usual fare, but it was something different.
Yeah, I like different. So very cool. Well, I'm going to go ahead and bring on a caller, and I'd like to welcome the lovely Lou to the show. Welcome, Lou.
Hello, Pam, and hello, Rexy.
Hello, Lou.
That poem by Bukowski Splash just titillated my muse.
Oh,
excellent.
Awesome.
And I like titillation.
Oh, come on, Sal. We got to have some fricassee of squirrel, especially with some good bread. Mm-hmm. You don't even tear it apart. You just strip off the skin. You wash off the outside, roll it in some flour, put it in some olive oil, and let it saute up nicely on both sides, drop in a few vegetables to help with the flavor, a bit of garlic, and then you drop in a nice flavored red wine and just put a cover on it and let it simmer until it falls off the bone. Yummy.
I don't know about that squirrel, but I'll take a glass of wine.
But yeah, bring a couple extra bottles of wine for Lou and Selena and me. I'll eat the squirrel, but I'll also join them in the drinking. It actually tastes like, slightly tastes like chicken, you know, a dark meat chicken. Not exactly, but, you know.
I don't think there's much meat, except maybe on the thighs. Heavy on the thighs.
That poor squirrel is just trying to hold on to his nuts.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Did you see in the news that some bird now collected so many acorns that they found, like, hundreds of pounds inside the wall, and they had to tear it out.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
That would not surprise me. That would not surprise me at all.
No, I thought that was funny because you mentioned squirrels. I was thinking of acorns. And I do like my nuts. Almonds, walnuts, pecans.
Oh, yum. Pecans are my favorite.
Tell you what, Stella. I do make a very good Waldorf that will blow your mind because I serve it on a quarter of roasted golden pineapple.
Oh, that sounds good.
That sounds really good.
Oh, it is. Cause
right
gotta,
now, yeah, we were just talking. Nuno wrote a poem about tacos, so I'm craving tacos right now.
Because it comes with two sauces. I use sweet Thai sauce, and I take some vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
Balsamic vinegar reduction. So you get a little sweet heat from the maypoi and a little bit of sweet tart from the balsam.
Yeah.
You get that for dipping.
I have to give that a try. I just got me some balsamic vinegar right now from Italy.
When you reduce it, it brings out the sweetness and it makes a wonderful topping for vanilla bean ice cream.
Oh, that sounds so good. See, now you're just making me hungry. I didn't get to squirrel me some crunchy strawberry like Pam did. I'm hungry.
I should have picked
I'm
up
hungry.
Because strawberry with this cream is great.
It sounds good. Sounds delicious. And
our poetry is
going to be tart and delicious tonight.
Oh,
I can't wait
to
see what people wrote.
We got a great line of poetry tonight.
Well, I guess then we should kick things off before it gets later.
I was going to ask you, what
made
you pick that quote out of curiosity before we divulge into all this delicious poetry?
I wanted to do something from Bukowski, but it's usually one of the naughtier ones I pick on. So I started scrolling.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. He's looking for something different, and I came across Splash. And I thought, well, this looks interesting enough to play with.
And we did. Then all the muses came out to play. See?
Yes. Well, all right, Pam, where do we start?
Well, you know, I was thinking that it would probably be a good idea for us to read the poem that inspired all these muses. So I have put up Splash by Charles Bukowski. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. Splash by Charles Bukowski. The illusion is that you are simply reading this poem. The reality is that this is more than a poem. This is a beggar's knife. This is a tulip. This is a soldier marching through Madrid. This is you on your deathbed. This is Li Po laughing on the ground. This is not a goddamn poem. This is a horse asleep, a butterfly in your brain. This is the devil's circus. You are not reading this on a page. The page is reading you. Feel it? It's like a cobra. It's a hungry eagle circling the room. This is not a poem. Poems are dull. They make you sleep. These words force you to a new madness. You have been blessed. You've been pushed into a blinding area of light. The elephant dreams with you now. The curve of space bends and laughs. You can die now. You can die now as people were meant to die. Great, victorious, hearing the music, being the music, roaring, roaring, roaring. And poem. What'd you think, Lou, of the overall piece itself?
You know, I like the rawness of his poem. You know, sometimes when we're reading poetry, you know, we write. And, you know, when we're writing, we're like thinking that this thought doesn't mean damn thing. And then when we start thinking about what we're writing or not thinking, then all these other images and things twist and to the poetry. It's like, you know, I know that like sometimes when you write a poem and then maybe a couple of months later you go back and read it and you go, shit, I wrote this? you know. And, you know, and I liked, you know, where he says, this is LiPo laughing underground. This is not a goddamn poem. You know, and it's sometimes it's just things that we need to express, that we need to get out. Like he brings out, it's like a cobra, like a hungry eagle circling the room. You know, you want people to read your expressions and what you're saying. And, you know, because I laughed when he said, this is not a poem. Poems are dull. I could just see him with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth in disgust, thinking about what he thinks poetry is. These words force you to a new madness. You have been blessed. You have been pushed into a blinding area of light. And, you know, and that's what he wants to see, is maybe to move the mind, to move the emotions, to, you know, oh, God, I got to read another poem. No, this is, these are my words. Read what I'm saying. Even if you don't like it, it's not dull. Just read it. Fucking read it.
Excellent.
I don't know. That's just what I got out of it.
Excellent. Thank you, Lee. And Pam, what about you?
Oh, I like this. First of all, I'm glad you were. Let me rephrase that, because I almost said I'm glad you were inspired, because that was the last comment I said. I thought you did a wonderful read of that, Rex. And this is a great example. Like, people are always talking about, you know, how vulgar Charles Bukowski is. And, yes, he definitely could be. He could be a very vulgar ass in his poetry. Although, for me personally, I think that's part of his appeal. But this is a fine example of that his poetry isn't just about that, you know, that there's more depth to him, I think, and intelligence than people realize. And he's definitely a classic poet, in my opinion, that's worth exploring. What, to me, I feel like this takes a bite and a punch at the idea of how people's misconceived ideas of poetry, you know, from history, from their own personal experience with it, and how they need to see it in a new light, and they need to, like, open their mind's eyes, you know, in order to experience it in a new way. You know, I really like all the way he describes it. This is LiPo laughing underground. This is not a goddamn poem. This is a horse asleep, a butterfly in your brain. This is the devil's circus. You are not reading this on a page. The page is reading you. So definitely an awesome choice for a prompt, and very well done.
Nice, Tim. Thank you. That LiPo dropping in there was a fun bit, because LiPo wrote about everyday life in poetry, especially being drunk. So there was a connection there between him and LiPo, which was something nice. The thought with the horse asleep, the butterfly within the devil's circus, and then the elephant dreams with you now, the curved space bends and laughs. Those are nice. He drops in metaphors, which he usually doesn't do. He's pretty much straightforward within his language. And he still offers up the self-deprecating note, but this walks in a different, there's a philosophical note to this, as bending the idea of, you know what, it is what it is, only if you think it's what it is, as opposed to actually looking into it beneath the words and seeing something else that tickles the imagination and eats the soul. So, what do you want to do now?
All right, let me go ahead and grab the next poem. And we have Curse by After the Fire. And Lou, would you give that a read for us, please?
Curse by After the Fire. You think that this is simply rhyming verse, but friend, I warn you that it's something worse. You'll read the words, they'll stick inside your mind, and soon you'll leave your sanity behind. For this is not a poem, it's a curse, a spell that no mere mortal can reverse. It's a demon planted in your brain. That's purpose is to drive a man insane. It's much too late for you to see the signs. The hex is written here between the lines. And as you read, the time is drawing nigh for you to suffer sorely and to die. End poem.
Great read, Lou. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, great read there, Lou. I like this one. I like that he chose to do a Bukowski-inspired poem in rhyme. I know he had brought up in Late Night Poets that, you know, he was inspired to write to Bukowski, but his mind kept going back to rhyme, which is something that Bukowski really didn't do. But to me, this works because it's great inspiration off of the prompt and yet is done like, you know, now Dave stayed true to himself. And I feel like he had a lot of fun with this. Like there's a darkness to it,
yeah.
The idea of it being cursed, but it's also fun in its own dark, twisted way. And the other thing that I think about is it reminds me of how we can't resist, you know, we like if this was an actual real curse, we would probably keep on reading just out of curiosity. And as they say, curiosity kills the cat. And it just it's a wonderful ride all the way through because it's that reminder of the human nature that even when we're given a warning, we still want to stand too close to the edge. And great right, but I especially was drawn to the second stanza. For this is not a poem, it's a curse, a spell that no mere mortal can reverse. It is even planted in your brain that the purpose is to drive a man insane. And, well, I am poem, sorry. But great right.
Thank you, Pam. And Lou, you got to read it. How about you?
You know, I thought this was a fantastic poem by him. I liked the imagery throughout, you know, that delicious, dangerous temptation like Pam brought out. You know, just like when they say don't look inside or don't do this. What do you got to do? You got to do it, right? You know, there's just something in humans that we cross lines that we shouldn't cross. And, you know, and I thought that he brought that out. I really, for me, I love that first creaking door that opens that just, you know, that draws you in, you know, and, you know, where he says that you'll read these words, they'll stick in your mind, and soon you'll leave your sanity behind. And I just, you know, I just found that is the case of, you know, like, those scary movies and sci-fis and everything that we see, you know, don't open the box, don't read the words. And of course, that's what everybody does, that delicious temptation, even though something sinister may leak in there.
Absolutely. I'll agree with you there, Lou, because I found this to be a mirrored effect, that dive inside the mirror to the darkness on the other side, because Bukowski starts off with "This is not a poem," and then Dave rolls with the idea of curse, but he also hits the same idea. You think that this is simply rhyming verse, but friend, I warn you, it's something worse. You will read the words; they'll stick in your mind, and soon you'll leave your sanity behind. Nicely done there. Benny hits on that note, for this is not a poem, it's a curse. Again, rolling into that thought. But the back end of Bukowski's hit on that note that you can finally die and you can roar, roar, and roar. This walks definitely on the back end of that too. It's much too late for you to see the signs. The hex is written here between the lines. And as you read, the time is drawing nigh for you to suffer sorely and to die. So he's taking that note of dying happily from Bukowski and totally rolling over on the other side, that mirrored effect, but really on the darker end of things with the curse to X. So you get that idea. It's a kind of Ouija board effect. You aren't supposed to play Ouija boards because you bring out the rotten stuff. So he looked in the mirror and brought out the back end of what was in there and put it as a matching note to Bukowski's. Nicely done, Dave. All right, Pam. What about going on?
Okie dokie, Smokey. Well, up next, we have Blood Splatter by Marriott Dark. And it goes like this. Misconceptions when your eyes dance over words assembled in a poetic trooping of the colors, battle ready. But the reality is the words trivialize the truth. Truth is poetry eviscerates by becoming more ritual suicide, a state of psychosis and paranoia, a razor cut of welts and scars, self-harming etudes, permanent reminders of acute symbiosis of music and cancerous tumors, leprous, imperious thoughts, writing as it should be, uncomfortable, mass suicide, ritual executions, no bullshit alliterations, no poetic devices, unless it is the cocking of a pistol and a bullet to the brain where blood splatters the poetic, creating metastatic ripples that tear off gobs of flesh. Poetry is not holistic. It is a holocaust, a synchronized tarantella dance of death chimneys and endless cues of burning words. Poetry is not comfort food. It is a cancerous madness eating into your brain and laughs at your discomfort and unease. Poetry is dying a good death. It is honorable to write as the gods intended, words created as stab wounds, piercings with blood splatter, as testament, not folly. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Lou, why don't we start with you, please?
You know, this is very dark, and the emotions in there, just, you drown in them. You know, you drown in this blood of poetic words. And, you know, for me, poetry was a catharsis. You know, it allows me to speak and to breathe and to express myself. You know, being where I was silenced as a child, you know, it's when I read certain poems, everything bubbles out. And that's what, you know, I see, especially where he says, eating into your brain and laughs at your discomfort and unease, poetry is dying a good death. It is honorable to write as the gods intended, words created as stab wounds, piercings with blood splatter, as testament, not folly. And, you know, that is the emotion that is spilled over onto computer, where our fingers scribble like a madman, where our fingers type relentlessly until we can just expose. And like, it's like having surgery and having heart surgery and having your rib cage open where you're exposed. And that's what I felt in this poem. This is just powerful in its descriptions.
Absolutely, Lou. You're right. Thank you. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, this is definitely a powerful write. I like that he writes about how, you know, poetry is supposed to be ugly enough to grab our attention. It's supposed to talk about those things in life and history that make us uncomfortable. And that's part of our job as poets. I think, anyways, is that we have this gift in order to make sure that we can write about those truths that are out there. And either it can be either like healing for ourselves, as Lou was mentioning, that's very important. It can even be healing for a people, a history. And maybe you can't completely heal, but you can make sure that it's not forgotten. You can make sure those Holocausts are not forgotten, that slavery is not forgotten. I really like A State of Psychosis and Paranoia, A Razor Cut of Wealth and Scars, Self-Harming Etudes, Permanent Reminders of Acute Symbiosis of Music and Cancerous Tumors. But I have to say that the part that made me laugh was with the part about not alliteration. Oh, no bullshit. I mean, no offense to everybody. I mean, I do alliteration myself. I think it's great. But the fact that I loved when he said no bullshit alliterations, no poetic devices, and blessed is the cocking of a pistol and a bullet in the brain. You know, and I think with this visceral imagery and metaphor, he really grabs our attention. Excellent, right?
Nice. Thank you, Pam. I like the thought and the self-harming attitude. That was a nice touch. And that thought with the coughing of a pistol, a bullet to the brain, where blood splatter is the poetic, creating metastatic ripples that tear off gobs of flesh. Poetry is not ballistic. It is a holocaust. There's a note in this to, I think Bukowski would like this, because it is an in-your-face slap that begs you to read into and between the words. It's not comfort food. It's a cancerous madness eating into your brain and laughs at your discomfort and unease. There's a nice tone to shock value, which opens up the eyes. Oh, shit. Did I just read that? And that nice note to a synchronized tarantella dance of death chimneys and endless cues of burning words. Ooh, something that jars the mind, opens the eyes, and gets you to reread a second and a third time to see what you missed because you went through it too quickly the first time. Nice, Marianne. This is really cool. Thank you. All right, Pam. We're back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Meeting of Minds by Stelina. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. Aha. Meeting of Minds by Stelina. These words before you are gristle and bone on which your feeble imaginations, my art, I hone. Each letter bleeds lifeblood from my veins, scribing over pages of inner sanctum pains. My seeping soul I brazenly bear unto you, for you to thrust dripping daggers through, a fiery basilisk breathing brimstone, protecting the flaxen-haired muse's cherry stone. For when I weave my words within, to your meager minds almost chagrin, the thread of poesy may be concealed, waiting for a kindred spirit to whom it is revealed. Poetry is a voice, a fantasy, a dream, a meeting of minds in the extreme. And poem. All right, Pam, you got to go first.
All right. Well, first of all, Rex, great read there. I love the way she shaped her poems to add a sense of, not her poems, but her stanzas, to add a sense of movement. That is wonderful use of imagery, powerful metaphors. I like how there's kind of a dark sensuality to this, but it's not blatant. But to me, I like how it talks about how poetry is revealing the rawest, deepest part of ourselves, the part that feels so strongly, the part that, you know, we feel like our spirit is naked, our soul is naked when we write certain poetry we're revealing things to people that, you know, we have to trust that, you know, we either have to trust them or we have to trust ourselves that if they can't handle what we offer up, that's on them. You know, I really like Each letter bleeds lifeblood from my veins, scribing over pages of inner sanctum pains. My seeping soul I brazenly bear onto you, for you to thrust dripping daggers through. A fiery basilisk breathing brimstone, protecting the flaxen-haired muse's cherry stone. And then, for when I weave my words within to your meager mind's utmost chagrin. And I like how that part, because there's a strength of thought there in the whole idea that not everybody is going to be able to understand where your mind is coming from. But that's okay, because, like I said, it's on them. You have to be raw, you have to be honest with your poetry, and you have to reveal who you are. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Lou, how about you?
You know, after I listened to you, you did such a beautiful job in reading Selena's poem. You know, and I agree with what everything Pam says. You know, our mind is composed of so many letters and notes, just like a symphony, or just, you know, just we hear the words and then we put them on paper, you know, like she says, you know, scribbling over pages, my inner sanctum of pain. You know, a lot of times, sometimes it's fiction, sometimes it's not, and sometimes we don't tell. Okay, but with poetry, like Pam brought, there are some that are never going to understand. They will, you know, to me, each poem is precious. It doesn't always have to match what everybody thinks poetry should be. We all sing our different songs, and some people will just dagger our poetry to death or say they can't understand it. And you know what? They don't understand. And, you know, that's understandable. And, you know, but, you know, please take the knife out of my back. You know, and then we find those people where she brings out here. I really love this stanza. The thread of poesy may be concealed, waiting for a kindred spirit to whom it is revealed. And, you know, sometimes when this is what I like about talking about poetry, because each of us see something different. And what one sees, the other one may not see. And in some ways, it just opens up your mind, your spirit, your heart. And, you know, these are, like she says here, you know, for me, poetry is a voice, a fantasy, a dream, a meaning of mind in the extreme. And, oh, how I love the extreme.
Nice, Lou. Thank you. And you're right, the meaning of the mind. There is a nice, careful note to this. These words before you are bristle and bone. The thought, you got feeble imaginations, and then the thoughts are dripping daggers through. And when we said, my words within to your meager mind's utmost chagrin. So there's a note to those who, as you said, rip into without thoughts of looking a little deeper. Then she offers up, the thread of poesy may be concealed, waiting for a kindred spirit to whom it is revealed. The idea is, if you don't understand, you know what? You don't have to tear it apart, especially when you don't offer up a cogent thought as to why you're tearing it apart. So there's an understanding on the other side. And it's fine if you want to hit something, but you've got to offer up something as, hey, if you went this route, it might have made a bit more sense instead of tripping daggers through. But the idea on that, the thread of poesy may be concealed, waiting for a kindred spirit to whom it is revealed. The idea is find something in the piece that you do understand and you notice and it says something to you, and work around that as a comment rather than a deliberate dysfunctionary mean thought, so to speak. You can always find something that'll grab your mind. And hey, you might not be right, you might be wrong, but the idea is when I write something, sometimes it's deliberate, most times it's not, and it doesn't matter what anybody thinks. It's what they offer up that they think. I don't care once it's gone from my plate, it's everybody else's in that moment who's reading it. It isn't mine. There's no meaning behind it, except when I'm being delivered. And you know when that is. So the idea is, hey, take from it something and give something back.
Amen to that. Well said there, Rex. All right. Lou. Up next is your poem. Go ahead and give it a read for us.
Thank you. Let me refresh my page. Computer. Okay. This is what I saw in his poem, and, of course, I mixed it in with myself. Rose thorns, anguish, and fragrant bliss, let it choke you. Letter splay, leaking unforgiveness, pupils red, watery glaze, fist, crumpled blue-lined confessions, scribbling carbon graphite, shanking soft tissue temples, beseeching, pleading, blackened, rub mascara raccoon swollen eyelids, fingers darkness ropes sweet, rose petals, needles press, sweaty perfume neck closing eyelids in death dulcet fragrance, yet a maddening giggle contorts, whiskey flavored dulcet lips, cleaving, stabbing natural grains, blessing me in rotting schemes, you shit, hours dingle dangle like horse hoofs pounded well-paced bricks, your pressing voice dripping literally sweet nothings, swallowing sacramental bread, forcing honeyed grape juice altar, wine hungover and lies over indulgences, pious sanctimonious ass, black and smeared oiled white feathers, wings twitch, laden darkness, asphyxiates. Does this increase your sprouted engorged crotch spilling seed on white sheet tissue, dulling another shattered yellow pencil tip, tongue's excruciating sharp blade tip, it cuts, surface cuts, shanked cuts, you are the dagger regardless of my bloody knees kneeling, plowing through mental carnival tents, corroding sugar swirled pink cotton candy kisses, singeing cigarette burns press the trails. My tongue, dried by your shadow's oppression, finding my sputtering speech, lashing gunfire shots, reading through paper tissue bullshit, targets your dirty deceit, drugged, egomaniacal, dirty dog behavior. Get the fuck out of my rational cerebral musings. Bang, bang. End poem.
Great read, Lou. I think we should call you Charlene Bukowski for this one. or if you prefer, Charlotte. All right, Jen, why don't you take us off? What'd you think?
Oh, my gosh, this is wonderful. You really brought the attitude to this one. This one had, like, a whole rap battle attitude. It just, you didn't hold back with the punches. I feel like this one deserves a round of applause. I did have to put this one on a couple of my lists because I want to make sure to be able to go back and read it. And I love how you did channel Bukowski. And just like Dave, though, you were true to yourself. I really like how this talks about, kind of like what Rex and you were talking about with Selena's poem, is the idea of people who judge your poetry, who judge your word choices or whatever it is they want to nitpick at because, you know, they don't want to take time to try to understand it. And, you know, I'll be the first to say I don't understand a lot of people's poetry, especially the heavier the metaphors and the abstract and surrealism gets, but I like delving into it. I like giving my interpretation, you know, but there are people who will just refuse to actually use their brains, refuse to think about beyond their box. and then they lash out with this anger, and you really just take them and you grab them by the shirt collar, shake them hard, and say, you know what, fuck you. And I really like this all the way through, but especially wine hungover and lies, overindulgences, pious, sanctimonious ass, black and smeared oil, white feathers, wings, twitch, laid in darkness, asphyxiate. Does this increase your sprouted and gorged crotch-spilling seed on white cheap tissue, dawling another shattered yellow tip pencil tip? Oh, my gosh, that frickin' cracked me up. And the bang bang at the end, I love how the bang bang at the end has a nice kind of multiple layered meanings to me. Just an absolutely amazing write, and I'm so glad you were inspired.
Thank you, Pam.
See, I'll bite on that, and that remains why I called you Charlene Bukowski. I got. Pam may be right in her assessment on that, but I'm going to go the other route. I'm saying that you and Charlie Boy were in a room getting loaded, writing out stuff, and you're bantering back and forth at each other, him telling you some things and you dropping in these lines about him because you hit the tissue angle, I think, three times in here, soft tissue temples up top, and then you rolled in the mascara raccoon swollen eyelids. So you're the female version, getting angry, frustrated, and even offering up tears in the moment while he's arguing points with you on, you can't say that, or, hey, you might be a little bolder in your language. And then you do get bolder in your language. You call him an ass. You tell him to get the fuck out. You tell him, hey, I'm tired of seeing your nasty tissue lying all over the place that you've used, which I haven't been a part of. So fuck you. Now get out. I don't want no more of that shit. So I look at it as the two of you together, because it works perfectly that way as a note, because you're talking in his voice. You're playing in his terms, the cigarette burns, pressed betrayals, dried my tongue dried by your shadow's oppression, finding my sputtering speech, lashing gunfire shoots, reading through paper tissue bullshit. Again, that paper tissue, really cool. I like the thoughts with the three paper tissues dropped in here, and it's really good. Well done, Lou.
Thank you, Rex.
And it's nice to see you get roiling a bit dirty and, boy, cypress that way. Because we used to hear
why are you telling me? You don't like my sexual post?
No, I'm used to hearing you with that sultry growl that sets all the boys on fire. This was the other level.
Well, you see what it says there. Find what you love and let it kill you.
This was cooking enough for all those boys.
Well, you know, you just hit your temple. Sometimes they make you cry. I mean, when I first started writing, I cried a lot. I wanted to quit a lot. I would just hit my pen or my pencil and was like, the fuck? You know, it's just like, what's wrong with you? You know, I'm not going on your page.
I can
very much
relate to that, Lou. I've been saying the same thing.
Criticize your poetry. And, look at us now.
I used to get mad like that. You know what I found was real easy on the back end? I found it really, really cathartic by offering up a really nice compliment, thanking them for their comments.
Asinine.
And giving them 3 stars on top of it. And you know what? You never hear from them again.
Unfortunately, that doesn't work for me, because then they start private messaging me. So I have found the block button has been a blessing. I'm not here to argue with you. I'm here to share poetry, and I want to see what you got to say. And that's what, you know, when we do a contest or anything, what do you got to say? What does this inspire? Let me see what you got. And, you know, and then you read the poem and you're like, damn, that's some good stuff. Some good shit.
Yeah. And that's why when it comes to comments, if I get 10 comments, I like them to be different. I want the individual mind that comes through with it offers up. Because there are times when I'll make a comment, say, I hadn't quite thought of that, so I went back and read it. So, yeah, it does kind of work that way, don't it? You offer up something different. Mm-hmm. That they hadn't considered. I like those comments.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Because they tell you that they actually walked into it, read it, and came up with something that they hadn't thought of, but it makes sense. Those are great comments. Nicely done, Lou.
Thank you.
Oh, well, speaking of this, Stelina offers up, ugh, nasty-ass tissues. Clean them up yourself. Oh, God. All right, Pam, where are we going next?
All right. Well, I figure while we still have Lou, I would go ahead and give my poem a read. And, nowhere near as angry and edgy as yours, Lou. There's no tissues. So.
Oh, I wanted to tell you that we heard the recording of your poem, not to get off the subject, and everybody commented on how beautiful and different your voice sounded in that recording.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I've been trying to do recordings more. I'm hoping to eventually get to the level of, like, Stelina and Arcana and Rex, where I can do, like, background music. And, you know, I've been trying to practice with my voice. So, but, yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I think also it just gives me opportunity, if I don't get to that level, of just, you know, being able to relax, be by myself, and just keep, like, I think that recording I probably redid about 5 times.
It was beautiful. Yeah.
But thank you. Thank you so much. And
I just found by looking one day, I saw, where do I find this? So I went looking for free background music online. Boy, you can find a lot of stuff.
Oh, I'll have to do that.
I'm gonna have to learn how to do it too. Computers aren't my thing.
And then you download it and back it up to your words.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Arcana actually helpful with that kind of stuff. He was actually helping me out, but I was like, I have a headache and I need to lay down. I'm sorry.
that will give you a headache.
And who was it?
Yeah,
Aphasiana told me about Aphasiana told me about Mixpad, which is also a free app. And you can actually, because you can put in a couple of things, put in different clips to match up with the Mixpad, and they'll put it together, and then you save it, and you can actually upload that to SoundCloud.
Mixpad? M-I-X-P-A-D?
Yep. It's really good.
I'll check it out.
All right, Pam.
Oh,
there we are.
Yes. My poem, which is Calligraphy Lepers Spitting the Seeds. A poem is marching across the bend in time where huckleberries grow upon brass belt buckles reflecting the light. And here is where I spill the spirit of my lunatic fountain upon coffee-stained pages, waiting to gnaw upon words like hungry badgers, tracking the scent of wary ink. The weeping of elephants is expressed on the windswept plains where birds molt beneath a helios rising. I am bleeding stars on the edge of the knife, the knowledge of the bullet against the raised arms of cactus in the desert grit of lizards and stones waiting for the spread of evening songs. Words open like veins of opium seduction in the tea kettle of kept knowledge fed to the four corners and the mouth of the Sphinx. I am resting in a canoe of willow bark, talking to the goddess in the sky. Here comes the eagles, bold and proud, like the words upon the page. They circle the land of water made holy in the fountains of lust. Eruptions of syrupy fuck yous pour down the sides of volcanoes, splayed and displayed by the war axe of my calligraphy lepers spitting the seeds. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Lou, why don't we start with you?
Oh, God. Okay. There's so many things in here, you know, that I feel and see, like, right here. I love this. I spill the spirit of my lunatic fountains upon coffee-stained pages, waiting to gnaw upon words like hungry badgers tracking the scent of weary ink. You know, sometimes, you know, you think about, you question your writing, you know, like I question my writing, you know, should I say this? Should I express this? And even though something tells us, you can say it nice, but, you know, it warps the poetry when you're, you know, it's kind of like your boss when you're trying to impress them and you're a lazy fuck and there's the other person sweating his brains out working, doing your job and his, you know. You know, I just, you know, this beautiful imagery in here, like words open. Oh, I love this. Words open like veins in opium seduction and the tea kettle of kept knowledge fed to the four corners and the mouth of the sphinx. There's just something. That there's something almost animalistic sometimes when we write that we have to get these words out. We have to get these images out. Poetry, you know, poetry to me is it's like music. To me, it is like music. It is music. And I can get enraptured in it. And that's why I love that stanza that you wrote. It just enraptures me. And, you know, it's just... like this, and it made me laugh. Eruptions of syrupy fuck yous pour down the sides of volcanoes. You know, I've gotten such horrible comments, and you know, I would cry, and I would just, you know, one of my friends told me, "You have your own way of writing. Don't change it for anybody else." Don't change it for the autofill. And, you know, and when he told me that, then I was able to look at my writing and I would just, it's there. It, you know, it's, I let it go. It goes onto the page. And if you don't like it, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
Well, thank you, Lou. You're a great comment.
Nice, Lou.
I love your poem, Pam. Excellent poem.
No, there's truth in that. Don't change your particular style just because it doesn't meet someone else's grace. Kevin even questioned me on why I use my little apostrophes. I shorten everything. It's what I'm really, really comfortable with it. It gives it, there's a nice little old world flavor with it going back a few hundred years where the words were shortened. I like it. It adds flavor. So I don't think about it. I just do it. And it's what I enjoy. So no big deal. And don't change the way you're doing it either. You might evolve a bit and add a little tweak here and there, but that's on you, nobody else. Anyway, for Pam, I'm going to go with the first two stanzas. Everything else is almost irrelevant, but it's not because it's filled with great imagery. I'm just going to pick on the first two stanzas for a particular reason. That will be evident in a minute. A poem is marching across the bend in time where huckleberries grow upon brass belt buckles reflecting light. And here is where I spill the spirit of my lunatic fountains upon coffee-stained pages. Now, those two stanzas give me a thought of Tombstone and Doc Holliday. I'm your Huckleberry, and this is where you die.
I like that. I like that. Oh. Thank you. And thank you for the inspiration, Rex.
Well, Bukowski is always a good inspiration.
Yes,
something
yes, he is. That's
mind.
For sure. That is for sure.
Kevin told me he didn't like the word dust in my poem. Yeah, I use that too. I like the old language.
Oh, well. That's all I got to say. Well, shit.
All right, Pam, what are you doing? Hey, Eric, how you doing? Eric's on the board.
Yeah. Yep, good to see Eric on the board.
All right, what we got next?
All right, up next we have You Have to Read It to the End by Peripatetic. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
You Have to Read It to the End by Peripatetic. This isn't what you think it is. That is, it isn't only that. Before you started reading this, you had more life ahead to live than you do now. It's killing you to read these lines I posted here. Are you aware of dying yet? How long will you keep reading on? Was this worth minutes of your life to read or further contemplate until you grasp that it's a prank that you have played upon yourself? No poet is responsible for readers' gullibility. Pretending to be meaningful is just a scam we perpetrate. We fool you, not just once or twice, but to your shame, until you die. End poem. I like that. Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a great poem. I like this. It does have a nice a bit of humor. I like how he went in the idea of the thought of how do we spend our time and how we have to question, like, is this something? Because everything we do takes time away from us, and, you know, and or time is being taken away from us, whether or not we do anything. But, you know, are we doing something that's worth that 5 minutes, worth that 5 hours or whatever amount of time it is? And I like that he brings us questions in poetry are always great to me. You know, especially, are you aware of dying yet? And how long will you keep reading on? Was this worth minutes of your life to read or further contemplate until you grasp that it's a prank that you have played upon yourself? And it goes back to that idea of that curiosity, that need to finish that reading in order, in hopes that we're going to have some sort of reward at the end. I like this all the way through, and I like how it speaks on the idea of wasted time and making fools of ourselves. So very well done.
Yeah, thank you. And Lou, how about you?
You know, what I liked about this poem is first the title. It's a tease. And of course, when you get that tease, what do? You start reading. So then he starts questioning you, your mentality, like, why are you sitting here reading this poem? Don't you know it's a prank? It's a scam? And you don't realize it's the prank and the scam until you get to the last stanza. Yeah, we're all dying. So we're dying in reading, dying watching TV. We're dying. At least reading helps prevent Alzheimer's, and so does writing. So to me, it's not a prank. I like this poem.
Yes, it is. It's got some nice dark humor to it. It's a double whammy because he's making fun of both poets, the one who's writing it and the one who's reading it and offering up a comment that doesn't make any sense because he didn't like it to begin with. He could have just said, left and made no comment. But he went to the end and then went to the comment section to make the comment. So it's self-deprecating in the fact that, yeah, I just made fun of you, but you stayed long enough to read it and then comment. So who's the joke on? Nice. I like it. It's funny.
It is.
Well done, peripatetic. That was cool. All right, Pam, where are we going next?
All right, well, up next, let me grab the next one. We have It All Adds Up, Doesn't It? By Eric Swenson. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
It all adds up, doesn't it? O righteous knight, noble orator, decant thy oracle with thunderous voice command the four winds. Words spewed go forth. Merlin knew this, why don't you? I will, if you would, can and could stay there. Be a good puppy now. Give a dog a bone. Rave it righteousness. Ethereal words jotted down. Ink innocently blotted. Allotted soapbox podium begs an orator. Politics pays handsome dividends. Senders job done. I won't if you don't. Should and shan't stay. Cat and mouse game. Surreal aloofness. Synapses squirm like spermatozoa. Overeager to impregnate fertile cerebral caves. Double-edged pen sword hovers. Will it be lambs to the slaughter led today? Gypsy Rover was a wolf in sheep's clothing. Molly Malone, muscles and cockles aside. Snide Snickers, jitterbug. Wide-eyed horses patiently await beggars. Gullible Gulliver, little Lilliputian people sorted him out. Oh, noble knave, ever-present shadow close, warmongering humor, word squadrons march through or fly over hornet's nest. Send a drone, a clone that's safer. TikTok even better. Pictures easier read than words. Decipher the code too tedious. Merlin sighs. Spellcaster speechless. Threadbare magic saunters around aimlessly. I won't if you wouldn't. Could, can't, stay. On chant stands appalled. Rant and rave discreetly divorce. The quiet whisper before the storm speaks the loudest, doesn't it? Much louder than cynicism's holler howl. Poetic license supersedes the Fifth Amendment. It all adds up, doesn't it? End delightful poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the sound card. It is very much appreciated. And all right, Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, as always, I really enjoy and appreciate Eric's reading. And, I like that this speaks on the games we play and the things that people fall for, it's another one that uses a nice bite of humor to it. I particularly like I won't if you don't, should and shan't stay, cat and mouse game, surreal aloofness, synapses squirm like spermatozo, over eager to impregnate fertile cerebral caves. I like how that to me speaks on the idea of how some people are too eager to shove their poetry and their opinions down other people's throats. I really like how he uses characters like Gulliver and the Lilliputians and Merlin, and the inner and end rhyme add a nice rhythm to the poem, great alliteration, and that ending, much louder than cynicism's holler howl, poetic license supersedes the Fifth Amendment. It all adds up, doesn't it? And I love the phrase poetic license, and the idea of the freedom that it gives us as a poet, as an artist. So very cool, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Lou, how about you? What do you think?
Well, if I was Spock, I would have to say fascinating. I love Eric's poetry. He takes us on this whimsical journey of words, and you know, like Pam brought out Merlin and the Lilliputians, and you know, I loved that stanza that she read about the cerebral caves, because I believe it. But you know, it just seems like the ones who want to be the most impressive, who write for medals, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, because I enter contests and I do the same thing too. But what is your purpose? Is your purpose to just be that loud mouth that's in there that, you know, that, and I have gotten complaints from people that they should have gotten the gold medal, and I'm just like, whatever. that's my opinion. And, you know, I loved also this stanza here where he talked about, if I will, if you would, can and could stay there. Be a good puppy now. Give a dog a bone. Rabid righteousness. Ethereal words jotted down. Ink innocently blotted. Allotted soapbox podium begs an order. Politics pay handsome dividends, senders job done. You know, that, you know, because we know that these political hacks that are up there, whether they're reading words that somebody else wrote, a writer, and we are writers, and just like this, we spill our images onto paper, and I thought he did this fabulously, and God, I loved his voice and read.
Nice, Lou. Thank you very much. I got to start up top. That first stanza said quite a bit alone. O righteous knight, noble orator, decant thy oracle with thunderous voice, command the four winds, word spewed go forth. Merlin knew this. Why don't you? There's a double dip to note in there. The knight and Merlin, a nice nod to King Arthur. But also the lines in between those three, noble already decant thy oracle with thunderous voice, command four winds, words spewed forth. It hints on Shakespeare. And then you get into that second stanza, which offers up another note. I will, if you would, can and could stay there. Be a good puppy now. Give a dog a bone. Rabid righteousness, ethereal words jotted down, ink innocently blotted. Allotted soapbox podium begs an orator. Politics pays handsome dividends. Senders job done. A note to the speech writers. The rabid righteousness there. He offers up nice tones of wry and dry and subtle humor in this, playing off the cat and mouse, surreal aloofness, cynic, squirm like spermatozoa, over-eager to impregnate fertile cerebral caves. The idea of dipping into the mind so it sparks those synapses to think, but also offering up the idea behind the the mind doing the writing. Where something else on the back end of this is all that was known. That piece about the, oh, here we go. Send a drone, a clone, that's safer. Again, a little bit of humor. TikTok, even better. Pictures easier read than words. Decipher, decode, too tedious. He's biting at those people who looked at TikTok and the little ends because they're too lazy to actually read an article that would inform them what's going around. They just take off the little 30-second blips here and there and get nothing out of the story except that 30-second blip. And the back end, Merlin sighs, spellcaster speechless, threadbare magic saunters around aimlessly. I won't if you wouldn't, could, can't stay. Aunt Shot stands appalled, rant and rave discreetly divorced. The quiet whisper before the storm speaks the loudest, doesn't it? And that thought is much louder than cynicism's holler howl. So instead of listening to the screeching lunatics, the whispers are where the truth is. Poetic license supersedes the Fifth Amendment. It all adds up, doesn't it? That note of the Fifth Amendment. I plead mm-hmm. the Fifth because I don't want to incriminate myself. Well, a poet doesn't incriminate. A poet will always incriminate himself in voice. And that's the truth of it. Nicely done, Eric. Thank you very much. I'm glad to see you on the board, my friend. And top of the morning to you. All right, Kim. Where do we go now?
All right. Up next, we have Jump by Naomi Sarah. And she also provided us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Jump. These are but words scribbled down a page. I never said it was a poem, that it would be of any interest to you. So why keep reading? This is not about you. Or is it? Only you can answer that. And now you must be asking yourself, well, what the hell is it all about then? And why should I keep reading? No? Is this 9/11, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the bombing of Hiroshima, 3 days later that of Nagasaki, your jaw-dropping shock, your frazzled mind roaring, what the fuck? And why? Is it the crackling, wet noise of your death rattle as light is snuffed out? And you drift into black, having no idea what awaits? Or simply, you gazing up at a cloud, wondering, is it elephant shoes? A yellow submarine? A rocket man shooting for drops of Jupiter? Daffodils fluttering and dancing in a sweet Carolina breeze? While a prisoner on death row looks upon the same cloud, seeing a yellow brick road, a rabbit hole, or just the same yellow submarine. Why not? Why not? And when you finally see it for yourself, for you and only you, your boggled mind yowling and purring like a sex-crazed pussy in heat, as you swell and burst with the words in what was never just a poem, drip into the colors of a Picasso that was never simply some outrageously expensive tableau, wave goodbye with a slow, poignant sob as a final pianissimo fades into absolute silence. Only then, like a madman, will you have jumped from the cliff, hollering, bloody hell, I got it, I fucking got it, while your sugar-coated lips suck out the sweetness from a newly unwrapped candy bar, humming, no, this, it was never just a poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And I think you and Lou hit on the same level tonight. I like the humor. All right, Lou, what do you think?
You know, she kind of took me into a dizzying spin, images that she had here. You know, we have these, I call them gawkers or looky-loos, that they don't write poetry, but they're on the site and they're reading, you know, what are they looking for? Why are you reading my poetry? What made you look at my poem? And why are you keep reading it? Did you understand it? What are you looking for? You know, some of these just blast out just nasty comments, you know, disasters of, you know, saying that your poem is a disaster, you know, and at the same time, you know, it's just like, I really like this. You're gazing at a cloud wondering, is it an elephant's shoes, a yellow submarine, a rocket man shooting for drops of Jupiter, daffodils fluttering and dancing in sweet Carolina breeze? Well, you know what? We all write our own force of poetry. What we see, what's going around us, this isn't some yellow brick road where you're trying to look at the end of the thing. You know, you like she says, you're boggled mind yowling and purring like a sex crazed pussy in heat. You know, I'm not, this isn't a site where it's not a dating site. I'm not looking to love you. I'm not looking to like you. I'm here to write. And if you don't like my poetry, shut it. And the next thing, and then when you finally get it, you know, you finally got it. You understood what I said. Duh, right? Why your sugar-coated lips suck out the sweetness from a newly unwrapped candy bar humming. You know, what did it take? What did it take for you to get this? Because this is not written for you. It's for myself. And if, you know, if you think it's for you, you think I'm talking about you, grow the fuck up, you know?
Ow, Lou's on fire. Nice, Lou. All right, Pam, what about you? And you mean taking it again?
I was, yeah. And again, I don't do that very often. So, yeah, whatever. But this has a great attitude to it. And I like where it says, this is not about you, or is it? Because I feel like those lines speak on the idea of if the shoe fits, wear it. And I really like how deep she gets with the lines. Is this 9/11, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the bombing of Hiroshima, 3 days later, that of Nagasaki, your jaw dropping in shock, your frazzled mind roaring, what the fuck and why? You know, and there's so much wonderful attitude and great thought in the whole idea of what people take from our poetry and, you know, and what they, you know, what they get from it and what they don't get from it, how they can, you know, misinterpret it or not understand it. You know, so just a wonderful write all the way through. But I do also particularly like, only then like a madman will you have jumped from the cliff hollering, bloody hell, I got it, I fucking got it, you know. I like that. I like the way she expresses that aha moment, you know. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice, Pam, thank you. You know what's funny, we are always hear Naomi Reid, and it's always a soft voice.
Mm-hmm.
This was anything but. This had a little bit of a edge and grit to it, and a little bit of anger.
Right.
That first section up to 9/11 was all about the reader and daring them to actually take a look beneath the actual voice and look inside and see what's there. The jump, that angle is to take a leap of faith and trust your mind to actually indulge in the words. And that's where the back end of this hits on the sort of, which it says, when you finally see it for yourself, for you and only you, your boogled mind yowling and purring like a sex-crazed pussy in heat as you swell and burst with the words in what was never just a poem, drip into the colors of Picasso that was never simply some outrageously expensive tableau. And the thought of only then, like a madman, will you jump from the cliff. Again, that leap of faith, hollering, bloody hell, I got it. I fucking got it. And a little bit of the light bulb that, above your head going off. Is all she's often saying here is just take a leap of faith, indulge mentality, and look inside. Don't just read the words and drop off some little drab of, great poem, and that's all it said. Offer up a bit of yourself for the voice that you just read upon. Simple. Nicely done, Naomi. All right, Pam. Where do we dine next? I'm going to hate myself and judge in this one. God.
Oh, yeah.
This has been too good so far.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to hate you when it comes to judging this.
Yeah, I'm certainly glad you're going to be judging this one. So good luck with that.
Pass the buck.
You guys suck.
I'm just messing with you, Pam. I had a glass of wine today, so I'm happy.
Oh, good. All right, Pam, what's next for our dining pleasure, since we're on a roll with rights that are just blowing everything out of the water?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. We got top-notch quality tonight. And up next we have Caution, Do Not Drink of These Waters by S. Sharp. And he also provided us with a recording, so here we go.
Caution, do not drink of these waters. Do not dive in. This poem is dangerous waters. Words wet with typhoid or cholera pin you down in the pain of thought, the pleasure of memory, where things grow invisible or amongst the swamp lilies. A canteen full of cause and purpose, this is not ingested. It is a freeze frame at the moment before being hit by the train, crossing the tracks. A penny smashed Lincoln's face the moment before being shot in the back of his head at Ford Theater. Words like ledge or cliff absorbed as if through osmosis, balancing the living and dead, strapped to a cross by a colt under a starry sky, surrounded by words, lit a fire and ready to die, set running to the far end of a dream, a cliff jumping off, hoping the rocky crags understand the urgency. Words like dagger or bullet, fire from the tongue's flask, passed around like playing Russian roulette, impaling oneself upon the image of blood splattered upon the wall where you stand in front of the firing squad, ready for the pall. Words dripping, pooling at your feet, like a last wish and a drink from these waters.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you think?
I like this. I like that he, even the title, offering up the caution, do not drink of these waters. It has a wonderful extended metaphor on the idea of how you know, words can poison us, and words can heal us. And I say that because it reminds me of a quote that's something along the line, the difference between poison and medicine is a dose, because a lot of plants that are poisonous or, you know, were once used for their healing properties, but the thing was to know the dose in which to use them. And I feel like that this poem makes me think of that idea. I particularly like with this imagery metaphor, words like ledge or cliff absorbed as if through osmosis, balance the living and dead strapped to a cross by a cult under a starry sky, surrounded by words lit a fire and ready to die, set running to the far end of a dream, a cliff. You know, to me that speaks on the idea of letting our words burn brightly. And so, excellent write and very well done.
Nice, Pam. Thank you. And Lou, what do you think?
You know, this is one of the best poems I have ever read by Scott. I mean, I find that his poem, you know, where he just his title, Caution, Do Not Drink of These Waters. You know, how words can poison the mind and make you rabid, and then he talks about how at times we can be so transfixed by the sayings and the words of others that we offer up. We do things that we would never do that are dangerous. We would sacrifice our lives, give over our pension, our paychecks, our home, our jewelry to the words of somebody that is just spewing dishonesty. You know, especially where, you know, he talked about that. It made me think of so many things that have happened in history. And right now, for some reason, I can see these people, those religious leaders, or the 1970s, I can't remember the name of that guy that killed that actress and hacked them and cut her baby out. You know, you do know the name, right? What is the name of the guy had all these
Charles
women?
Manson?
Yes.
The Charles Manson? Okay.
Yeah, the Charles Manson, how his words move people to do things that they would never do. You know, and I never really was, you know, I'm aware of all these things, and also like that guy, that religious man that poisoned everybody in his cult. These, you know, words
Reverend
can
Jim
be
Jones.
Dangerous. Jim Jones, thank you so much. And just where it says, by a cult under a starry sky surrounded by words, lit a fire and ready to die, you know, set a running to the far end of the dream of a cliff jumping off, you know. And do they remember who they don't even remember who they were. It's just amazing how poisonous words can be. And, you know, and many of people have stood by their words, you know, believed in their words, and they've stood in front of firing squads for the belief of their words. And, you know, this really made me think deeper than I thought I was going to think.
Nice. I like that, Lou. Thank you. You and Pam walk the same way. I guess I'm going to walk off the ledge and walk a little differently. Caution.
No.
Do not drink of these waters. There's a deliberate note to that, and I like it. Do not dive in. This poem is dangerous waters. Words wet with typhoid or cholera pin you down. In the pain of thought, the pleasure of memory, the things grow invisible or amongst the swamp lilies. I like that. In the pain of thought, the pleasure of memory. Pain and pleasure, they go hand in hand because they're part and parcel of who we are. I think the note with the the title, and everything that walks through this is shock and awe. It's an extended metaphor to a piece that grabs you by the throat and has your strict attention to the voice being offered. So the deliberate notes, this the thought, where is it? Crossing the tracks, a penny smashed, Lincoln's face in a moment before being shot in the back of his head at Ford Theater. That's a deliberate note to get you to peek further down the line. The thought of words like ledge or cliff absorbed as if through osmosis, balance the living and dead, strapped to a cross by a cult under a starry sky. This I like this for the full note of being an extended metaphor where something grabs you, whether it's a book, it's a poem, anything that's written that gives you strict attention and your mind and your eyes are locked in place. You can't put it down. Why? It might be the shock value, it might be the voice that's coming out of that to begin with. You initially get the shock, but the awe upon reading is where everything blossoms in the mind, and you feel that warm, fuzzy, you get that warm, fuzzy feeling all over. So, nicely done, Scott. God damn, another one. Shit. Yes, I'm getting blasted. I'm going to have to make some very long, expensive comments for this stuff. You guys, you're good. And my life is going to suck. All right, where are we going next?
All right, up next we have This Is Not a Poem by Guilty. And Lou, would you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
Oh, it would be my honor. He's a great poet. This is not a poem by Guilty. This is a sacred screed, written in invisible ink, seen only by rapid monkeys chittering about nonsense. This is a manifesto, written by an obese blind man. He wears a diaper so he can wallow in bubbly brown shit. Open declaration of war, of false prophets. Nikola Tesla, rotten apples, tic-toe spy machine, indoctrinating the youth, malformed opinions. There are billions. Naked prayer of a bombed-out Baptist church, napalm-burned flesh of a buxom blonde nurse, last will and testament of the father you cursed after screwing you out of inheritance of this bitter earth. End poem.
Great read, Lou. Son of a bitch, another one. I'm going to hate myself, man, and it's all your fault. No, it's just my fault I picked a poem. Oh, I should hate myself. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Oh, man, yeah, great. Just like I like to say, top shelf pop poetry, got quality and quantity tonight. I really enjoy this all the way through, and Guilty has to be one of my favorite poets. I really like how he speaks on the idea that this is the poet's individual voice that speaks for their own beliefs, their own core values, and also speaks on the idea of the evil throughout history and the way we meet it head on with poetry. I really like the use of the word manifesto. This is a manifesto written by an obese blind man. He wears a diaper so he can wallow in bubbly brown shit, open declarations of war on false prophets, Nikola Tesla, rotten apples, the toast by machines. They're wonderful bite here. I was particularly hit hard by naked prayer of a bombed out Baptist church, napalm burned flesh of a buxom blonde nurse, last will and testament of the father you cursed. And I like that the father speaks on the idea of a holy father, a God, but it also speaks on the idea of a biological and individual father, an earthly father. And there's so much thought here on the hate and violence. You know, I mean, you read about churches that get bombed, you know, the napalm burn flesh. It's throughout history, there's been so much evil and so much violence. And sometimes it's difficult to express it all in just one simple poem, that it oftentimes feels like we fall short. I like how there's this bite to this edge of anger and attitude. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I like to see the title rolling off of Bukowski. Nice touch there. That opening stanza, "This is a sacred screed written in invisible ink, seen only by rabid monkeys chittering about nonsense." Right off the note, rabid monkeys chittering about nonsense. The fools, the note to online nonsense. And then the manifesto, mm-hmm, written by an obese blind man. He wears a diaper so he can wallow in rubber, bubbly brown shit. A great note to those gamers who put on diapers to sit and roll through a 24-hour period playing games so they don't have to get up to go to the bathroom. Oh, God, what a fucking note that is. And then that third stanza, the false prophets, Nikola Tesla, rotten apples, and I think that should be TikTok spy machines indoctrinating the youth, malformed opinions, billions. Again, there's a lot of truth there. So this is it is angry, as you said, Pam. And I did like that that thought in the back end with the father. That is a double bite to both religion as well as the reality in the father. And damn, there is some bitterness, anger, and mm-hmm, a lot of truth in this piece. Damn. Maybe there should be a bit more than just 5 HPs, because, boy, I'm going to be growing up the wrong tree with all these.
Mm-hmm.
Bloody men. All right, Pam, what do we got next?
All right, up next we have Swash by Hat. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Swash by Hats. It's a dog shit on your new beige carpet, scratched vinyl record of the Rolling Stones, which you've got for your 18th birthday. Hot nudity hisses and your zipper gets stuck. Black umbrella doesn't open in the rain. Memory lost on the exam. Sudden blindness. Drops of blood on the snow. Added oil to the fire. Wood brought into the forest. Instead of diamonds, bones, sin is a virtue. Your dreams turn to the dirt as if you're the fifth wheel. Poet, a skeleton with a lit cigarette and a glass of whiskey. He wears a plaid flannel green shirt and ragged jeans. He doesn't give a damn about etiquette. You swallow your narcotics just to see a butterfly sucking nectar from the red rose. Your time runs out. The same as flour from a leaky sack. Don't shoot the corpse and don't kick an injured dog. Stop breaking already broken bone. After all, you're just a guest here. Then the ash and the dust swirling. Whoosh. End poem. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. Another just brilliant write, amazing imagery and metaphors. I like the edge to this. Immediately, she grabs our attention with, it's a dog shit on your new beige carpet, scratched vinyl record of the Rolling Stones, which you've got for your 18th birthday. The imagery, because, well, let's face it, dog shit is horrible to have on any carpet, but a light-colored one, it really stands out, and you're not going to get that. It's just so hard to get that stain out. I really like, exactly. Instead of diamonds, bones, sin is a virtue. Your dreams turn to the dirt as if you're the fifth wheel poet, a skeleton with a lit cigarette and a glass of whiskey. He wears a plaid flannel green shirt and ragged jeans. He doesn't give a damn about etiquette. I really like how this talks about the beauty of poetry, but also talks about the brutality of poetry. And that's where it's don't shoot the corpse and don't kick an injured dog comes in. You know, the idea that poetry can offer something up that's honest and brutal and raw and reveals an injured part or a dead part of a person coming back to life. And it's not your job to shoot that corpse, to kick the injured dog, you know, but rather, you know, embrace poetry in all its forms and poets in all their forms. So excellent, right, and very well done.
And Lou, how about you?
You know, you did a great job in reading this. I love her imagery in here. It's, you know, it's quick and it's almost got a blade-like dagger to it to, like, you know, open your mind. You know, when I was reading, you know, I was thinking, you know, we just like a dog shit. You know, we stain our life with whatever we're doing. And sometimes that stain never goes away, just like our poetry. You know, it's here and it's in the open and it's for all those to read, whether you like it or not. You know, and, you know, sometimes we go through life, you know, going through hell. You know, the umbrella doesn't open, can't remember what we did in school. You know, sometimes you're that fifth wheel, you know, we can feel that way, these emotions. And then, you know, like she was saying, she goes right back in from her emotions and then she paints Bukowski, a skeleton with a cigarette, a glass of whiskey. He wears a plaid flannel green shirt and ragged jeans. He doesn't give a damn about etiquette, you know, and she goes into it. Then you swallow your narcotics just to see a butterfly sucking nectar from a red rose, you know, things that people will do. You know, to me, poetry is like poem Pam brought out in her, you know, it's an opium. It's a drug, you know, we're always trying to find time to express ourselves. For at least for me, I don't know how she meant it, but it how it makes me feel. You know, we're always trying to find time to write. We're always looking at things that, like that hole in that leaky sack of flour, trying to express ourselves. And then, you know, at the end, you know, she says, "Be careful." You know, don't. You know, there's some people that will just beat a dead dog, no matter how dead it is. They just keep hitting it. And, you know, and the same goes for us. You know, how are we, you know, just keep moving on, because we are. We're just a speck of dust that's swirling around. We come from dust, turn to dust, and whoosh, our life is gone.
Excellent. Thank you, Lou. All right. The first stanza, clear down to the second stanza, where added oil to the fire meets. It's kind of hits on all those little notes, those things you give so much care about. They're tiny, they're minuscule in the grand scheme of things, yet they bite and they gnaw at your ass and get you pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that a hot nudity hisses and your zipper gets stuck. That was off. Instead, you rip the damn thing. Doesn't open.
You get the skin.
The umbrella doesn't open in the rain, and you're getting soaking wet, and you're cursing the world to no end. And that the last thought in that second stanza, wood brought into the forest, which makes absolutely no sense, but it does make sense, because we're not replanting enough trees, so there needs to be wood to go back into the forest. So we have oxygen to breathe, to keep feeding that notion of us living, as well as everything else. The plants, they all need it. The grass needs it. They all feed off the oxygen by putting out the CO2 to begin with. They eat up the CO2 and give us oxygen in turn. Now, I like that little note in the middle. Poet, a skeleton with a lit cigarette and a glass of whiskey. He wears a plaid flannel green shirt and ragged jeans. He doesn't give a damn about etiquette. Why? PC is bullshit. It means absolutely fucking nothing except to appease a few illiterate souls who think they're doing something by adding PC into everything. We don't need political correctness in our speech. You want to be politically correct on the stage of politics? Fine, be politically correct there. Even then, I will say, fuck you. I will be the one that says, Joe Biden is dodo, that lying dog face, hair-snipping pony soldier coward, and should never have been elected. That's not PC. Don't care. But I'll offer it up. Why? It's true. Now, on the back end of this, you will swallow your narcotics just to see a butterfly sucking nectar from the red rose. Now, the idea in that is getting stoned to the point that you see things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to. Go outside. See the flowers blooming. Go outside. Smell the perfume from the rich rose bush or the cedar. Smell in a red cedar tree. Oh, my God, it's gorgeous. Notice the eagle that's flying, or that little trickle of river. That's the idea there. Your time runs out the same as a flower from a leaky sack. Hey, if you don't enjoy the world as is while you're here, then you're not living. And don't shoot the corpse. Don't kick an injured dog. Stop breaking already broken bone. The idea is don't add more shit to the shit that's already there. Got too much of it? There's no need for more. And after all, you're just a guest here in the ash and dust world. Yes, we are guests. We're here for a minute amount of time. We're born to die, and we die to live. There's simplicity in that. Enjoy it. You don't know when that turn is coming, and then it's gone. So you might just as well enjoy life instead of berating it. Nicely done, Kat. God damn, another one. Oh, bloody hell. Oh, I like that, Stell. William Wallace's last words in the movie, Braveheart. All right, Pam, where are we going?
All right. Well, most likely our last poem for the night, and then we'll just have just a few carryovers for next week, is Gone by Weaver of Dreams. And it goes like this. I am held fast by this roiling blackness, and with me is madness. I cannot take it into the light to taunt me and taint all its touches. I hide in this hinterland between life and loss, a nebulous wraith, untendable evil is here also, hoping to follow if I weaken enough. Were I to escape my nemesis, where might I go that it could not follow? Death is the answer. He hovers ever closer, awaiting my demise. Could I atone, make a selfless gesture? There is a way I might. I can accept the evil that awaits, invite it to reside within me. Then I will welcome death, submit, and as the last breath leaves my body, hearing that evil entity scream in disbelief will lighten my soul. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Lou, why don't we start with you, please?
You know, I kind of took this in a different light. For me, it was me seeing Bukowski sitting there, you know, with the smell of a woman that he just slept with, smoking a cigarette and just pondering over thoughts while he's sipping booze. And, you know, I can just, you know, see him sometimes in that insanity and that madness where, you know, some, you know, that desperation. Sometimes I feel desperation as poetry, as if he wanted to die, you know, will these thoughts, you know, will these memories, you know, my nemesis, go with me and torture me? Will these words, you know, in my mind, will it ever stop? And, you know, is the only way for me to die, is for me to have peace, is to take my last breath, enlighten my soul. But I'm not sure that the demons that I've made in my life are going to follow me there. This I actually like this. She took it in a 360 different type of way. Well done, Weaver.
Nice, Liz. Thank you. All right, Pam, what about you? You got to read it.
Yeah, I really like your observations there, Lou. And by the way, thank you so much for calling in and hanging out with us the whole show. Oh, man, this is a great Dark Rite by Weaver of Dreams by R. Kate. And I like that she took it in a different direction on the idea that it works as a story, but it also works metaphorically for the idea that sometimes the best way to face evil is head on, you know, and really just, the idea of exposing ourselves, you know. And there's such a sense of, as Lou said, that inner torment of that idea, like, you know, and that fits so well for the idea of a poet. Oftentimes, poets are tortured souls, and they're revealing their inner demons, and they're wanting to atone for a past, which is why I really like the part, because could I atone, make a selfless gesture? There is a way I might. I can accept that the evil that awaits, invite it to reside within me. You know, and that's a particularly dark line, but to me it speaks volumes on the idea of facing that evil within the world head on with poetry. So amazing write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. There's a couple lines of streaming. I cannot take it into light to taunt me and paint all it touches, that roiling blackness and the madness from the previous two lines. There is that note, understanding that death is there, yet there is a roiling darkness that surrounds this soul and madness that is also within. So she's already tainted in the moment and understands, doesn't want to take it because it'll taint everything as she transitions into the heavenly realms. And then that thought, hide in the hinterland between life and loss. Again, that gray shadow. You already understand you're dying, but you're still hiding. A nebulous wraith. There is something about being a wraith. It's usually a being that's mean, ugly, nasty, rigid claws, something to rip you apart. And understanding, again, untenable evil is here also, hoping to follow. Again, that note to the wraith. If I weaken enough. And then a thought to escape and understanding there is no escape, and instead offering up what becomes almost the devil's chit in the moment, but knowing there is something behind it that will make sense. I can accept the evil that awaits, invite it to reside within me, then I will become death. Submit, and as the last breath leaves my body, hearing that evil entity scream in disbelief, foiling the devil. You make the bargain and you bite the bastard in the ass, noting will lighten my soul. Submitting and taking him to hell and saying, sorry, you don't get it. I like that. Nicely done, Weaver. All right. Oh, we're at the back end of things. Lou, thank you for coming on board for the whole show. And especially... Well, man, those comments you had all night long, you were dipping hard. And Pam, you too. Thank you very much. And Stelina, Hats, and who else did we have on the board?
Eric.
Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely done, everybody. Thank you very much. We will do the leftovers for this next Tuesday morning. I'll send out another invite for those who didn't get read tonight. I guess there's about eight of them because we had more than 20 by the showtime. And
yeah, we have like 11 carryovers.
Oh, damn. Okay. Well, we will do 11. That's pretty much a whole show considering how these started. Damn.
I'll try and be there. Because I, like I said, I don't read these poems until the show is because it's exciting to see what people write, and I like to be surprised.
I do the same thing, Lou. I don't ever read beforehand because then you don't get that first impression. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right to go back a couple of days later and reread an ad,
yeah.
But you want that first impression.
Yes.
Anyway.
And that was a great prompt. You and Pam really rocked it tonight. Excellent.
You're kidding? Everything we've read so far rocked it. These guys were chafing my ass with this stuff. Damn.
I loved your poem, Pam. That was just fabulous.
Good night, gang.
Good night, Pam. Night, Rexy. Great show.